Right. It is my understanding that you may have saved Caitlin Clark's season by protecting her from a snowbank.
Well, look, we were at dinner for her 22nd birthday, and Kate Martin, her teammate and best friend, comes in and is sheepishly says that she was in such a hurry parking to get to the birthday dinner that she accidentally parked on both a curb and a snowbank. And so when dinner finished, we all go out in the street, and it was a couple of her teammates. We're out there pushing this car out, and we were all like, Caitlin, you can't get anywhere near this car. Like, none of us want to be responsible for, you know, injuring the goat. So Caitlin's she got assigned video. So she was in charge of the video. So she didn't get run over.
You know, it seems like that kind of tension is at the heart of your piece with Caitlin. She's a young woman, both on her team, but also living this kind of parallel life that is different from every single person around her.
You know, I think the world is full of, you know, some enormous percentage of watchers and a very small percentage of people being watched. And, you know, Caitlin over the last 18 months has, really the last 12 months, has moved from one of the watchers to the watched. And it's like, it's one of the most explosive forces in her life right now, trying to figure out how to still be the thing she wants to be, while also dealing with the fact that she's gotten everything she's ever wanted.
For any star, the path to greatness is paved with pitfalls most of us will never encounter. The burden of being the best person on the court. The challenges of trusting teammates whose physical gifts and talents are so far removed from your own. The responsibility of setting the tone for everyone around you. That is the road Caitlin Clark walks. So today, our Wright Thompson brings us closer to Clark's inner circle and reveals the personal conflict she copes with every day. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Tuesday, March 26th. This is ESPN Daily.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Right. After reporting this piece, you probably spent more time with her closely and in her orbit than really any other journalist out there. She's one of the biggest sports stars in America right now. But why did you specifically want to write about her?
I was watching the NCAA tournament last year like everybody else, and my jaw was on the floor.
A deep one. You bet!
I think one of the things that all of us have in common is we like the feeling of watching people in the full expression of their talents and doing it under duress and doing it under stress and on a public stage. I mean, sometimes I think sports, it's so intimate and personal, you almost shouldn't be allowed to watch it because people are risking so much and they're doing it as entertainment for other people. It's wild. And so I just was watching and was blown away, and I was lucky enough to get an assignment.
We've seen her demeanor in terms of who she is as a winner. We've seen her demeanor in terms of who she is as kind of a commercial star, if that makes sense, quite literally. You went to a lot of practices, though. You had quite a bit of access. What is Caitlin Clark, the player, like sort of behind those closed doors?
So I was there for the second practice of the year, and almost immediately she's just, you know, motherfucking the team managers who are the referees. And she's like, if they're not going to call fouls, like, don't even have them out here. And I was talking to her about it later, and she was like, we're trying to go back to the Final Four. We need practice reffed like it's the Final Four. She is a perfectionist and has a very high standard and is not scared to let you know when it's not being met. I mean, she's Michael Jordan punching Steve Kerr, you know? I mean, like, apex predator shit. She definitely has that thing. I mean, she even said to me, look, I step on the court. I want to kill people. I want to create havoc. So she has that thing that I think we've seen from sort of all great athletes.
Her high school coach once called her a ponytailed Kobe Bryant, a description that I absolutely love. But as part of that, at times in her career, especially when she was younger, it seemed like she struggled to understand the implications of being that much better than everybody else on the court. How has she adjusted to that in terms of the basketball space right now?
It's been a real process learning to trust people. I mean, first to trust the team that came together last year, and then to lose her 4 and 5 and have to learn to trust a new 4 and 5. I think she understands that a great team multiplies her and just as a bad team diminishes her. And so it's hard to trust. I mean, you know, her greatest gift is that she has a singular vision for herself and that she has been through 22 years able to trust it. And so, like, she can't let anybody steal that. And yet she also has to trust her coaches so that she can have a great team that multiplies her.
I'm fascinated by this concept of the greatness amongst others, because I feel it's something we think about a lot in terms of the men's game, but there's something about the women's game where we don't necessarily analyze it with the same type of feeling. Body language is a big part of that. What did you learn about how Caitlin has sort of worked on that over the course of the years?
Dude, she gets tape cut-ups, you know, like other people might get every pick and roll they screwed up. She gets body language clips after plays from games and practice because she has no poker face, none. Like, if she feels it, you see it. And so she's working on that. I mean, she had an experiment that some coaches asked her to do last year where they were like, just smile at everybody the first time you see them and just see how they react. Lisa Bluter has done an unbelievable job and deserves every coaching trophy that exists because, like Phil Jackson, like Tex Winter, like Steve Kerr, she has put together a team around a super volatile star and had it work.
Right. When you look back on Caitlin's journey to this moment, were you able to pinpoint when her coming out party like actually happened? What was the moment when she broke into national consciousness for you?
Sophomore year. You know, they're on the road at Michigan. They're down a bunch late in the game.
Something going offensively. Taiwo rims out, and that in a nutshell has been the story of the night for the Hawkeyes, shooting just 33%.
And she just goes off. I mean, she starts bombing these logo threes.
Are you kidding?
And, you know, it had happened earlier that year at a scrimmage where they were playing their male managers who they practice against and were way down with 3 or 4 minutes left. And she brought them all the way back. And, like, people still talk about that practice like it was the first time they realized, you know, that they were sort of holding nitroglycerin. And so they get in this game at Michigan and one of her teammates is in a huddle and literally says, it's just like that scrimmage. You know, and so she's just bombing threes.
And we have been treated to a gem tonight. Double team, no problem.
Because of COVID and injuries, they were only dressing like 7 or 8 people. And, you know, she almost won the game.
She has played 37 minutes tonight, the most of any player in the game. And she drills another triple.
And they ended up losing. They go out to like the FBO to the airport there, and their flight's a little delayed, so they're all sitting around watching her watch herself on SportsCenter.
She's got 36 points. She made her first eight. Look where that's from.
No hesitation.
She made her first eight in the quarter.
And for everybody, they were just like, all right, buckle up.
Has the team done anything? Have they had to have any measures in terms of, I don't know, sports psychologists or different methods to try to kind of cope with all this from a basketball standpoint? Caitlin Clark trusting her teammates on the court is one thing. Being a teammate of Caitlin Clark and living your life as a college student is quite another.
100%. They do have meetings where, like, you know, Kate Martin stood up in a meeting once and was like, everybody thinks they want to be Caitlin, but I don't really think you do. Like, the crown she wears is heavy. And they talk about it a lot. And, you know, Caitlin talks with performance coaches and her own coaches a lot about how her energy is the energy of the team. You know, I was at a practice once and Lisa Bluter at the end of practice said, we are her, you know, and they get that. And so, you know, if Caitlin's in a good mood, the team's in a good mood. If Caitlin's in a bad mood, the team's in a bad mood. If Caitlin goes 1-for-19, they lose. I mean, it's very much sort of an organism, and she's the brain.
Last year, they faced number one overall seed and defending champion South Carolina in the Final Four. You wrote, quote, when she first stepped onto the court before that South Carolina game, she felt like she left one dimension behind and moved into another, end quote. What did you mean by that?
You know, she... And this is coming from her, and it's also coming from, like, Iowa staffers who were watching her sort of stunned. She said she felt totally calm, and she said she felt separate from herself and from the life she was living in the locker room. She just stepped onto the court and felt like she was home.
One of the most anticipated matchups in the history of women's college basketball. Caitlin Clark and Iowa going up against the South Carolina machine.
I think we've all heard the greats talk about that feeling of the world slowing down and the pressure not getting to them and there being some sort of force field around them.
Clark gets a clean look and knocks it down. The show is delivering.
They just felt like they could do whatever they wanted to do. I mean, I've heard Michael Jordan talk about that. You know, you hear Kobe Bryant talk about that on Details. She felt like she was where she was supposed to be.
Clark races away, and the mythical mastery of Caitlin Clark continues. Iowa has conquered South Carolina.
That weekend was highly scrutinized across the college basketball world for a lot of different reasons. They went on to face LSU in the championship game. What did you end up learning about why that particular game was such a struggle for that Iowa team?
You know, a couple of things. One, LSU just shot lights out. And, you know, I think everybody will tell you when a team does that, you just can't beat them. Iowa didn't play great. I don't know if you know Bob Starkey, who's their associate head coach, is just a basketball genius. And his scouting report, which I saw, was incredible. And it was basically like, Caitlin's going to score. The question is where you let her score. She averages 27 when they win and 30 when they lose. And Monica, who was their center, like, shut her down and you shut them down. And, you know, LSU played a fabulous game. Coach Mulkey and Starkey put together a great game plan. And, like, you know, I think that, like, there was all of the sort of cultural talk around the game, and that made it huge news. I think on the court, one team just played better basketball and, you know, had a better plan.
What do you think Caitlin herself took away from that particular game?
How much it hurt, how close they got. Once you make it, you know how hard it is to get there. Making it to the national championship game doesn't make the next season easier. It makes it harder. Caitlin Clark can win you four games in the NCAA tournament. She could win you five. She's not going to win you six, and she knows that. She talks about that. you know, they're going to have to be a game that her teammates win.
Coming up, the fallout from that championship game. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. After the championship game last year, right, a lot of people were fixated on the trash talk between Caitlin and Angel Reese, but please do refresh everyone's memories on exactly how that transpired.
You know, so Caitlin against Louisville hit six straight threes and then looked over at Catherine Reynolds on their bench, who was one of the Iowa staffers, and just did the John Cena, you can't see me. And then Angel Reese, who I just love, did the John Cena, you can't see me back to her. And, you know, the thing lost in all of this is, like, you know, Caitlin hated that, but she also loved it. You know, it's everything she loves about basketball. Like, she can talk shit, but also take it. You know, like, Michael Jordan's like that. And so, you know, I think that that interaction meant one thing to people watching it, and I think it meant another thing to Angel and Caitlin, who were elite competitors. Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark look at each other and recognize each other. When they see each other, they are seen. They get it.
That moment, though, fairly or not, was definitively a bit of a turning point, though. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of the country sort of took sides and said, well, there's Caitlin Clark. She's the, for lack of a better term, suburban white girl that everybody seems to support. And then there's Angel Reese, the Bayou Barbie, putting off a completely different look that a lot of people who claim to be fans of one sport considered a little bit less. People looked at that differently.
Totally.
Is Caitlin aware of how that kind of dichotomy existed and how much is that a part of who she is now in terms of the public face?
I don't think she was aware of it. I think she got aware of it quickly.
Is Angel Reese facing too much backlash this morning?
Yes, she absolutely is.
I love Caitlin Clark. She's been a guest on this show. I think she's spectacular. I'm the one that's been calling her the Steph Curry of women's basketball. But here's the reality of the situation. She instigated this kind of stuff. Let's call it what it is. She was waving. She was doing the Cena.
When you get that famous like Angel and Caitlin got last year during the tournament, you're just a vessel for people to put their own shit in. And so I think that's hard to realize. That, like, they're not talking about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, the human beings. They're talking about these other very real ideas that famous people become avatars and they become vehicles for us to have the big national cultural discussions of the moment. And, you know, Caitlin was doing an interview when they got home from the Final Four and was answering all these questions. She was on Zoom, I think with us, in her apartment. And was like, she got it. She sort of understood, like, oh, if I step in it here, this is really bad for me. And that made her really, really nervous. She hangs up. One of her coaches told me that she was just shaking uncontrollably. You know, she texted her mom and Coach Bluter, was like, how'd I do? So she was very aware that she was walking along the third rail. And it certainly made her aware of how she needs to move through the world, that she will always be, for people who've never met her, a vessel for their ideas, not necessarily hers. And I mean, and that's true for every famous person in every walk of life, in every field in this country and in every other one.
She grabbed headlines, Caitlin Clark did, for weeks this season as she passed all sorts of career scoring records. She passed Pete Maravich to become the all-time leading scorer, man or woman, in NCAA history. The team's now got a one seed for the first time in 32 years. Has anybody around Iowa City even been able to kind of enjoy this team? It feels like every single thing has been, well, Caitlin's doing this, Caitlin's breaking records, we're getting to the next point. You mentioned the fact that being in the national championship game makes you feel closer than you ever were. It kind of feels like the air somehow has to let out of this balloon and this team finally can just play basketball once they get onto the court. How do you think their tournament run is going to look?
I was with them a couple of days ago. I think they're ready. I mean, I hear what you're saying about breaking all the records, but it's also way more fun to climb a mountain than it is to try to stay on top of one.
Very true.
So there's like a great energy that it's been really, you can't get these tickets. The Iowa coaches were blown away that Nolan Ryan didn't call to get tickets. He just went on the internet and bought tickets because it was important to him that he take his granddaughters. And like, they're like, we would have given Nolan Ryan tickets. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like Lisa Bluter would have given him her tickets. And, you know, so there's just this great energy. You know, Jason Sudeikis is eating at Basta on Iowa Street, sitting in the window with Caitlin Clark. It's just a moment. Sometimes when you're in a moment, you're already worried about it ending. You know, I've been in a concert before and it's going really great and I'm already sad that it's going to be over, which is just a terrible negative energy to have. Like, I don't think there's that. I think that everybody knows that they will never see this again. And it's just been really, really fun to be in Iowa City. This is a circus, and the whole point of the circus is that it comes to town, but then it leaves.
Nobody is wishing for Caitlin Clark to walk away from Iowa, but when she declared that she was going to the WNBA, there was a very real sense of, okay, this is suddenly more finite than it was before we knew that decision. For her herself, did you get the sense that all of this fame and everything is something that she's ever going to miss?
I think there will certainly come in a time in her life when she, I don't know if she misses it, but appreciates it. Everything's moving so fast for her right now that I don't think she is having the same sort of emotional response to this that you and I are having, or maybe even would have. I think there's a lot coming at her really fast. She couldn't stay another year. There's no way. One, she just would have been bored, you know, like it was time to go. This had run its course. I think she wants a challenge. Her life is in front of her. And Iowa, it felt to me, even before the season started, was behind her. I mean, one of the things she said to me once was that, you know, part of her last year thought, why couldn't this have happened my last year? You know, like she was aware that it would have been a lot cleaner if she would have walked off that court in Dallas and that would have been it. And the pressure of having to come back and do it again was just eating her. I mean, the fact that she had this year and that she broke all those records. I mean, I was with her before the season started and she seemed very anxious about the possibility of going backwards, of letting everybody down, of letting herself down, her family. I mean, she's very aware of the fact that lots of people have lots invested in her. And so the fact that like she rose to the occasion this season is actually kind of incredible.
You know, that's such an underrated part of all of this, which is the simple idea of pressure in a place like that, because you're right. Like Iowa is the kind of place where one person really can change the course of direction for pretty much everybody in town. And for a 21-year-old, to be dealing with that, the age factor alone is just remarkable.
I mean, I remember being 21. I mean, I just started writing for the Columbia, Missouri. I remember looking at other people who were succeeding and trying to figure out what they had that I didn't have, you know, and like wanting it. And also realizing that, like, what is it? Comparison is the thief of joy. Like realizing that, like, through that door lies madness. Like, I remember all of that. And so, you know, I wrote in the story, and I mean it. I mean, it from my very first time, I was like, this is a story about being 21, you know, because like that is such a specific age. And so, yeah, I mean, to your point, man, to be 21 and carrying that around and not having had some sort of public meltdown. I mean, there's a reason child stars go crazy.
Last thing, I want to read another line from your piece. It says, quote, "I have written about athletes for 2 decades, but I've never until now watched someone change from a solid into a liquid and a liquid into a gas," end quote. A little science lesson for you there, right? Please do expound on that.
She was changing form in front of us. You know, she was going from a very good college basketball player to a great college basketball player to the kind of person who exists as an idea. The kind of person who can be an avatar for those conversations you were talking about. The kind of person who everybody has an opinion about. You change form at some point. You know, there's a great John Updike quote that I love. That I talk about almost constantly because it's just so true. But it's "the mask eats the face." I mean, his quote's better than that. I'm poorly paraphrasing. So she is also trying to protect her actual self as all of this is happening. So, like, there are two arcs to me of her season. There's someone who is trying to become a wholly different, rare person. And there is someone trying not to change. And those two things are and will forever be in conflict.
None of us can shoot from the logo, but we can all relate to that. Thank you, Wright.
Yes, sir.
You can find a link to Wright's article titled "Being Caitlin Clark: Inside the World of the Player Who Redefined the Game" in today's episode description. I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.